marvelous. You should care for me. And softly nice is paradise, is what I love to see. You made my life so glamorous. You can't blame me for feeling amorous. Oh, it's wonderful, it's marvelous that you should care for me.
Okay, I'd like to call this special city council workshop to order. If you all rise and join me in the Pledge of Allegiance. Ready, begin.
I pledge allegiance to the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
Thank you. Okay, roll call.
Councilmember Richards?
Here.
Councilmember Bennett?
Here.
Councilmember Aceves?
Here.
Mayor Pro Tempore Kasdan?
Here.
Mayor Perotti?
Here. Okay, at this time we'll have a public forum. Anybody that wishes to speak to anything that's not on our agenda today?
There are no speaker slips.
Okay, thank you. City Manager, amendments or adjustments?
We have no amendments or adjustments.
Item A1, Fiscal Year 2017-18 and 2018-19 Operating Budget Workshop Number 2.
Okay. Ms. Green, are you going to start us off?
Yes, thank you. Today, our intent is to continue working through the proposed budget for fiscal years 17-18 and 18-19. At our first workshop, we left off in the operating budget. So today, what we would like to do is pick up where we left off in the street maintenance operating budget for Public Works, and then move on to a review of special funds, and then begin our review of the capital improvement program, which is lengthy. So we're not certain we'll get through all of it today, which is fine because we have a workshop tomorrow. And our plan for workshop number 3 is to continue our review of the CIP budget to discuss the library budget. Also, we have a fourth workshop scheduled on Friday, May 26th. And at that workshop, we want to address any outstanding items that we have remaining and discuss support to other agencies' requests, city grants and CDBG allocations, and also invite some of the parties that requested support to come and say a few words to council. And then we'd like council to be able to provide staff with some final direction on funding priorities, with the hope that we'll be able to wrap up our budget process and present the final budget for adoption to the city council on June 6th. So that's the overview of what we are attempting to accomplish. Again, this slide just focuses on what we'll be doing today. We'll give a brief overview of budget updates that have occurred since our first budget workshop. We'll go into updated fund balance and, as I mentioned earlier, continue expenditures and the operating budgets, go to special funds and CIP. So the updates since our last workshop include a few items. However, revenue projections have stayed the same. There were no adjustments or changes since we presented our revenue projections on May 11th. But for expenditure projections, the material presented in your packet and the items we'll go over today reflect now the capital improvement program expenditures, both expenditures requested of the general fund and all the other special funds that carry the bulk of the funding for the capital improvement program. We also have a few revisions to the line item detail by department and program. We'll go over those. And we have also, at council's direction, included the amounts of previously approved support to other agency requests. And we also made a recommendation for an expenditure amount of general fund monies in the pavement rehabilitation program. So we've plugged in a few additional numbers to help council with your review and to help you start to think about your funding priorities. We recognize that changes will be made, so we'll be prepared to take your feedback as we go along. So Luke Rio, our interim finance director, is going to start to talk more specifically about the budget updates I referred to.
Okay, good morning, Madam Mayor, members of the City Council. So for the budget updates, the changes since the addition since budget workshop number one, there's a summary table presented right before you. So what's now included is the support to other agencies that were previously approved. This amounted to $497,000 in each year one and year two. We've also included an intern position in the current planning department that was missed at budget workshop number two. We've also included the traffic engineer consultant in year two for engineering. And for street improvements, we've made a recommendation at this time for pavement rehabilitation in the amounts of $1.1 million in year one and $390,000 in year two. Now we'll get into further detail on pavement rehabilitation in the next few slides. For CIP, we've also included $399,000 in year one and $780,000 in year two. Also included in this budget is for police services, an electric vehicle and the AutoChalk mobile software for the parking enforcement officer. It's important to note that these capital expenses will be paid out of the Sheriff Facilities DIF fund. I also want to point out real quick that during the budget workshop number one, there were some cleanup items. So if you were to do a direct comparison, our overall expenditures increased by $2.7 million in year one, and then in year two, $1.7 million. And these adjustments result to personnel costs across departments.
If I could, I thought the engineer was going to be year one and two, in case we needed it.
It is included in year one. This is the additions.
Okay.
Yeah.
Council's direction at workshop number one was to add it into year two. So,
okay.
And I just want to note for the public's benefit, if they're just tuning in this table, with the exception of the expenditures for the electric vehicle and the AutoChalk mobile software, the other items are general fund items only. I wouldn't want anyone to think that our entire capital improvement program, for example, was only just under $400,000 for the coming fiscal year. So just to make that distinction.
Some more additional updates from budget workshop number one. So now we have a current and updated city proposed org chart that has now been attached and included in your packet. You'll see that there's an additional schedule that captures the history of our support to other agencies that can be found in your packet as attachment six. We've also updated the fund balance, which I'll touch on here in a little bit. And the five-year forecast has now been updated to reflect the additions from workshop number one. There is also an additional letter from Gersh Park that has been also provided in your packet as well.
Excuse me, would this be the correct time to ask some questions about the organizational chart? I have a question regarding under city manager. I don't see on here, and maybe I'm not looking at it correctly, I guess her title would be, what is her title? Senior Management Analyst, that's Heidi Atten that we contract with. Is she listed on here?
She is not, since her services are provided under contract. She is not a city employee.
Okay.
So this chart only reflects employees who are on our payroll, not contract services.
And is her contract, I think we just renewed her contract.
Not too long ago, council approved an amendment to extend the contract through, I believe, September 30th of 2017.
Okay, and will that position then be, in the, moving into the future, will that position, will you be looking for somebody to fill that position?
At this time, staff is not requesting that we make that a full-time position, because what we wanted to do was see the impacts of the new deputy city manager coming in, and also the transfer of the management assistant from legal into the city manager's office to see if we had additional staffing needs or not. So if we determine we do, we'll decide whether we want to recommend contract service or in-house service, and would discuss that at mid-year with the council.
And then the other question was regarding the deletion of the position in planning of the a management analyst, and we will be discussing that about whether we want to keep that position open. Could you give me an idea of the things that that position would be doing? Because my understanding is that they would be implementing the permit tracking system.
Certainly. Give me one moment to pull up the information.
Okay, I didn't know whether this was
that.
The right time, Michelle, or later on.
It's up to council. You know, if you want to wrap up those things now or at the end of the process, it's really just a matter of what information you want now and with the timing given today.
I think for me it would help me make the decision whether we want to keep that position open.
Sure. I'm happy to go over those duties now if council's okay with that. I need to pull up that sheet.
Okay.
So just one second.
Okay. Thank you.
Okay, so to reiterate, there's one vacant management analyst position in the planning department that we had proposed for deletion since it had never been filled. It was authorized 2 years ago. The previous planning director had not recommended filling it and instead had recommended deletion. But council may wish to retain the position and to direct staff to do so and add it back into the city's schedule of authorized positions. And you could also just leave it status quo, leave it where it is, and let the new planning director that will be coming on board shortly determine the need for that position. But to answer your question, the types of duties that this analyst would do in that department would be managing of contracts and their associated budgets, assisting with the establishment of internal controls and procedures for things like tracking developer deposit accounts, and also looking at billing for replenishment of those deposit accounts and helping with looking at invoices for various contracts and services. They would provide, pardon me, oversight of the planning department's website content and oversight of any grants received by the department to make sure that department staff would be following the terms of those grants, meeting deadlines, seeking reimbursements in a timely manner, et cetera, providing budget support to the managers and the director in that department, and providing oversight and assistance with implementation of the permit tracking system as that software gets installed and implemented following the adoption of the zoning ordinance. So that's kind of a broad overview, and certainly there would be refinements to those duties. If council wants to leave that position in the schedule of authorized positions, what that would mean is approximately $106,400 in personnel expenditures would remain in the budget, and it would have a net financial impact of decreasing the savings to the general fund related to the personnel changes we've recommended. So in the end, the overall decrease would be about $79,500.
And since that position is not filled, who's doing all that now?
Some of these things are not being done because it's not time yet, like the oversight of the permit tracking system. I understand that some of the other tasks are spread between project planners and also the management assistant who is in the department currently. So it's kind of a group effort to cover a lot of these items.
So it sounds to me, as hearing your job description, it would be beneficial to keep that position to help staff. But also, I'm under the understanding that our counter permit technician is no longer with us, so that's a position that's needed in planning as well?
It's not needed as a new allocation. We have a temporary employee filling that role, and we haven't changed that allocation in the budget because that's a needed position. And recruitment is going to be, if it's not underway already, it's about to open. So it is underway already, staff is telling me. So we are in the process of filling that.
Okay. I guess what I'm trying to understand, wrap my arms around, is the fact that there seems to be a need in planning. And I'm just going to throw it out there. What would you think of the idea of, I mean, I know you're responsible for staff and where they go, but the idea of maybe putting this management assistant into planning for now to help out until those positions are filled. It seems like there's a need.
Well, that's something that the interim planning director and I have not discussed yet, but certainly we can do that and provide our input to council at one of the future workshops before we adopt the budget.
All right. And I know for me, I'm just having a little bit of a difficult problem making some major decisions based on not having our management audit from that planning department just to see what their recommendations are.
Yes, I understand that frustration. I did receive the final draft of that report yesterday. I have looked it over this morning. I will be able to provide an advance copy to council to look at. The public copy won't be available probably until Friday.
Well, that would be definitely helpful.
Yes.
Thank you.
So,
Mayor Pro Tem.
Thank you. Just one, I don't know how much there is an overlap with these, but the management analyst position, or is it management assistant position? That's the in the city managers. I noticed that some of those job description elements are similar to the ones that were just described for the, so assist with contracting businesses with expired and overdue licenses to ensure compliance, assist with drafting RFPs and service contracts. Those were elements in the one that's in the city manager's office. And whether it makes sense on a temporary basis or, but there's obviously, we don't know at this point you might know how much time, how much demand there is in the city manager's office and how fluid, in essence, the boundaries are between planning and city managers and how much one, But I guess to stop my soliloquy, how much is the that assistant position in the city manager's available or likely or appropriately empowered to assist in planning and that work?
Right. Well, again, it has not been a conversation that we've had with the planning staff, so we would have to get their impressions and evaluate what the recommendation might potentially be. As far as how fluid is it, certainly in the past we've had successful sharing of positions between departments. So in our structure, there is fluidity. It isn't as formal as maybe in larger cities or county government, et cetera.
Well, I could imagine that if it's a particular skill in drafting, reviewing contracts or drafting RMPs that applies to different entities in the city,
right.
It could be somebody who picks up, who kind of floats or stays in the city manager, for instance, but is receives requests from other departments or something like that.
Right, because in the analyst series, if you will, a lot of the duties are generalist. They can be applied to just about any department where there are those types of general management support and administrative duties. Certainly, when you get into the more technical duties of, say, an engineer, this series would be very limited. So the purpose is to provide a kind of a career path for positions that provide direct support to administrators and managers, not clerical support, but a higher level, depending on which of the positions in that job series.
And if I understand right, is this the same set of activities that I believe it was Ms. Wells mentioned would be something that would assist in planning and enabling them to accomplish their tasks, that this was something that took up a lot of the time of the current planning staff, and it would be a help for them to have some assistance with that regard? Am I remembering the discussion from before correctly?
Yes, I believe that's along the lines of what Ms. Wells had said. The duties that I have reviewed today with council are the result of Ms. Wells and Ms. Prossy discussing the position, providing me with the information, discussing with me. So this is consistent with their thinking as well, that it would, in for some of these duties, address unmet needs, in others take some of the pressure off other positions. But it is also important to note that, again, you know, this is general support, not the technical types of services that our contracts provide for more specialized studies and, you know, certain,
understood,
you know, like the zoning ordinance and things like that. So this is a generalist position.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so the slide right before you is an updated general fund summary. You can see that the operating revenues remain the same as previous for the from the first workshop that held. We've now updated the operating expenditures for both years. Capital expenditures have now been plugged in, and now you can see that we have total expenditures at $24.79 million in the fiscal year 17-18 and $26.65 million in 18-19. Now, both these years result in a net change of $1 million. So this is considered your net revenue, net operating revenue over expenditures. So general fund expenditures. Overall general fund expenditures are at $24.79 million in year one. And in year two, the overall general fund expenditures are at $25.65 million. And again, these now include the previous support to other agencies. This also includes pavement rehab and CIP projects out of the general fund.
So $1 million in, that's on my... is that an adequate buffer? Does that represent, I think your target is 5%.
Our target is 5%, so that's basically off of $20 million in revenue. That would be the buffer off of $20 million. If we were to do it off of 25, it'd be roughly around 1.5. Mm-hmm. And going on to the next slide, I'll cover that here.
So you're feeling a little...
Not necessarily. We've got more info to share on that.
So now this is our a table of our fund balance projections. They have been updated from the first budget workshop. If you look all the way down to the bottom line number, that are the unassigned fund balance. So our projected ending fund balance for fiscal year 17-18 is the 1.5 million there, and that kind of represents the buffer we try to maintain, depending on fluctuations of revenue sources. And this gives us the opportunity to address any unexpected expenditures as well. So moving on to the expenditures update. So now the City Council's budget includes the $497,000 in year one and year two for support to other agencies that was previously approved in prior years. Current planning again includes that intern position that was missed in the first workshop. And we've added an on-call traffic engineer and the engineering services in both years for $40,000. So moving on to Public Works, so this is where we're picking up from our last budget workshop number one. We left off on Public Works street improvements, and today we'll be covering the pavement rehabilitation program. And at this point, staff is recommending a general fund contribution of $1.1 million in year one and $390,000 in year two. We have the latest five-year pavement rehab report that identifies significant need in funding. And in the next few slides, we'll be providing possible funding options to meet our pavement condition index levels.
We realize this is very much a balance between PCI goals, council policy, and funding available. So we tried to come up with some options that would help meet some of the goals or get us close to the goals that council has established. Our public works director, Rosemary Gaglione, is going to walk you through this.
Thank you very much, Mayor Pro Tem, members of council. So this kind of complicated looking chart is just showing the different levels of investment and how quickly pavement would degrade at lesser spending amounts. So if we were looking at, you know, between $3.3 and $4.1 million per year, we would get a little bit of a jump in year one, and then we would kind of level out. But that would mean that every year, that's the contribution toward paving. Given all of the things that the general fund is having to support over the next 2 years, another option is to go with between a $2.5 million to $3.5 million a year contribution, and that you see on the orange line. And you see that in 18-19 we come up at roughly the same place in year two. So in the first year, at least, to go ahead and put in a little smaller investment, and the second year we end up in year two at the same system-wide PCI of 68, and then it would start to degrade over time. Now over time, we'll be looking for other funding sources. We would hope that as SBCAG gets new money from SB1, perhaps they'll release some of that regional surface transportation program money. That's still a discussion for the SBCAG board to have. But for the new council members, when Measure A came in, one of the things that we lost for 30 years was the STIP money to member agencies. So, and the last of the STIP money is going to build the Equal project. So we lost the STIP money. What we didn't realize, we were also going to end up losing, because it seems like the project estimates were a bit low and the revenue projections were a bit high, is we also lost the regional surface transportation money, which comes in every year as divided by population. So I think we're around 400,000 or something like that a year that we would normally be getting. So we haven't been getting that probably since 2009, 2010. Now with SB1, we have a new infusion of cash. It's also going to SBCAG. And I think they're getting another 12 million a year or something like that. So the SBCAG director doesn't have an answer for us yet. But when the RSTP was taken to go into reserve for 101, there was discussion that if new money came in, whether it be grants or other new money, that perhaps an equal amount of the RSTP could be released. So that could provide more funding in the future.
I just wanted to point out before we go on, in this slide, the scenario we're looking at is the $2 million a year or gray line that's in the graph, which would be about a $1.2 million general fund contribution. And we'll talk about the breakdown of other funds next.
So for pavement rehab, what we're looking is a variety of funds from not only the general fund, but gas tax, Measure A, and our the LSTP, which is the Local Surface Transportation Program. We are going to be getting now, because of SB1, an extra $715,000 a year of STIP money we weren't getting before. So that will be added to the pavement rehab. When we look at cost reduction strategies, please understand when we give you the estimates, those are based on averages and they're conservative. All of these have 15 to 20% contingency built in because we don't know what we're going to. And that's standard in engineering at the early point. We stretch the dollars as best that we can. We also look at, if you look at a roadway, and Caltrans has done this on freeways for years, but if you look at a roadway, the travel lanes take more traffic. Well, the bike lanes take less weight, and maybe the parking lanes take less. So we also look at going ahead, and we did this on Kyriel, design the bike lanes, the shoulders, for a slightly less TI. And we were able to save $200,000-$300,000 just by reducing that structural section while we beef up the travel lanes to handle more traffic. Other areas that you can look at, if buses stay in the right lane all of the time, you can look at doing that. But if they move a lot, then you won't be able to. The other thing we look at is annualized cost. So we don't just automatically say that we want every road to last 20 or 30 years. We take a look and we say, if you have a 10-year fix and a 20-year fix, and the 20-year fix is only 1.5 times the 10-year fix, then you're certainly saving money by doing the 20-year fix. So we also, that was something in the first overlay we looked at, the annualized costs and which one gave us the most bang for the buck. If you're very close, then you would say, well, let's do the 20-year, and then you save inconvenience to the public, which is important as well. As we lower funding, we do have the possible negative impact, which would be a somewhat shorter life of improvement. So when you have less money to work with, you might not have the choice between the 10 and the 20-year fix. You might have to go with the 10-year fix, which will bring you back and have some additional costs in the future. And any of the funding levels shown is still a significant investment in our road system. Another thing we're looking at doing is in-house inspection. So I came from an agency where all of the inspection was done by employees, and they were trained for this. Except for the materials testing and compaction testing, which requires special certification, there's no reason that some of our staff can't be trained in pavement inspection, and we could save $100,000 to $250,000 a year just in sending these folks to class and getting a little bit of equipment that would be necessary. And the disruption in our regular work wouldn't be that great, considering these just once a year we have these projects. We can also look at sort of a hybrid thing. If we get into specialized pavement treatments, we could have PEI on site as well. But with the city in charge of the inspection, we wouldn't have the conflict of interest that we would have if they also did design and inspection. So we expect a significant savings there.
May I ask a question on the train portion?
Yes.
Instead of sending all our staff out, is it possible to bring a trainer here?
Yes, we can. Okay. And we wouldn't necessarily train everyone. We would select certain folks, and if it saves money to bring the training here, it's great.
Well, if you bring them here, you can train more people.
That's right, yes. And we could invite other agencies if we need to get the minimum number of people.
And let them share in the cost.
You bet. So our plan here is that over the course of the next 5 years, we can alternate the level of spending to spread out those limited pavement dollars. In looking at year one, investing $2.5 million, which would be a $1.2 million general fund contribution. Then in year two, $4.1 million, which would be a $3.3 million general fund contribution. Year three, $2.5 million with the $1.2 million general fund. Then in four, $4.1 million, and in year five, $2.5 million. The other thing is, as we look at the projects, the other CIP that we have, as we go ahead looking at grant opportunities to add to the funding we already have, that can free up either general fund or Measure A, and then those monies can be put into pavement. So as we go forward and we look at council priorities in the future, council may opt not to add new projects to the CIP and add more money into paving as well. So that's something for the future.
So excuse me, just to clarify, so I understand what the year one, which trend line we're on there, these also pertain to, these other dollar amounts pertain to the same trend line, with the expectation being that we're going to augment that amount consistent to get to the other lines?
We do have one more slide that has additional trend lines based on this alternate investment levels model, which I believe is next.
Okay, so this is the one that shows in the alternating budgets, where in the second year that we do end up at the same place. This is the one I was waiting for before. We end up at the same place, and then we see the PCIs begin to diverge. But I'd give anyone $20 who can tell me the difference between 64 and 65 on a PCI. So it's very close. I mean, mathematically it all plays out, but I don't know how obvious that would really be. And as we're saying, we're looking at for the next 2 years. Things can change in future years as we find other funds that could fund CIP and relinquish more money back to the general fund that could be put to paving.
So, in other words, going back to the earlier graph, let's see, there's 1, 2, 3. So the other ones at this point, when you were talking 64, 65, the other ones are at 68 and 67, the higher level ones?
Yes.
I realize these are only five-year projections, so... Well, I guess let me rephrase. So is it a reasonable expectation that we would be able to get grant money to supplement these to get closer to that 67, 68 target? Is that something that you see? You said you'll mm-hmm. look for it, but is it?
Well, we've brought in since 2008 an additional $11 million, at least in grant money. For our CIP, mm-hmm. and that does not include things that are, you know, you just have to fill the forms out and tell the good story, like the Highway Bridge Program or some of these others. These are actual competitive grants we've been able to get. So it is likely to get money for CIP in the future that could relinquish other monies back to the pavement program.
Okay, so it isn't necessarily that a question of is there money available for this particular project from grantors, but to the extent that we get grants almost in lots of areas, we free up money that we can use for this. And then, so you're saying there's a good likelihood we would be able to supplement these funds to push us to a higher trend line.
Yeah, there is. As a matter of fact, I think on June 20th, we're going to be bringing you a resolution to let us apply for an environmental enhancement mitigation program grant. We have to do mitigation for Equal, but this could give us up to $500,000 toward that, you know, and there's no downside. There's only upside of getting an extra $500,000. So between being really vigorous in chasing down grants and prioritizing what it is council wants to pursue in the way of projects, I see it very likely that we're going to free up some money that we currently have in projects, whether it's Measure A or general fund, and that definitely helps for paving.
And so our goal, let's say if we were thinking of this in terms of the strategic plan or something like that, our goal then, the objective is would it be consistent with achieving the 67, 68, that would be the objective we would have for year four and going forward?
That's the ultimate, because that's in line with council's policy of a PCI of 70 for arterials, 67 for collectors, and 65 for residential. So that would give us a system-wide of 68. So that would be the ultimate goal, yes.
Okay, thank you.
I have some questions that I would like to ask. If my calculations are correct, when we passed Measure A, the estimate for our city was $1.4 million a year from Measure A. I believe we're approaching about $1.6 million based on the increases that have occurred. And they've been more recent because during the recession there was a bit of a reduction. So have you factored that in relationship to the available dollars that you see into the future based on the percentage increases?
We haven't factored in the what we think SBCAG will, what the tax amounts will, increments will be in the future. We have it for what we know as of for this year and for next year. But we haven't gone, I don't think we've gone out 5 years in what we think the sales tax would be. I mean, because that can drop too. I mean, we're seeing a softening of the economy, and that can take a dive at any time.
But when you project funding, you have to project it based on, as you said, on the mm-hmm. knowledge at hand today. So mm-hmm. It could go either direction. But right now, it's up. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Yes, it is.
Okay.
It is up.
And as far as the additional funding going, coming through SBCAG, SB1, as I understand it, there are set numbers that will be coming to each and every city and to each and every county that are broken out in that bill. Mm-hmm. So could you touch on those particular numbers that are expected to come to us next year and the following year, which is not dependent upon any decisions from SBCAG?
Yes, the revenue estimates, and in particular what we have on the slide, that slide 14 that has the table of other funds that can be used towards pavement rehab, those include projections for the additional revenue for street maintenance that are the result of SB1. So we have factored that in. And then back to your
excuse me, where is that listed? I don't see an SB1 estimate.
Under gas tax, you'll see we have an additional amount in fiscal year 18-19 that goes up because of the impacts of SB1. There's also a small portion in 17-18 that's an additional amount of gas tax that we would be receiving as a result. Do we have that on a separate slide?
Yeah, so there's also an additional slide when we get to the special revenues fund. We do cover the SB1 additional gas tax as well.
Okay, well, in any future graphs that you indicate, put a footnote would be my recommendation so that it's easily understood that the new revenues being included or separated out, so it's an SB1 funding as opposed to making it inclusive so people can see the difference based on what was approved by the legislature.
That's a great suggestion. We'll definitely do that. Going back to your previous question about Measure A, we have a slide a little bit further down in our presentation that's going to talk about our revenue projections for Measure A, and they are up. We'll just touch on that when we get to it again. But I wanted to note that we have factored in increases in Measure A and our revenue projections as well.
Okay. Well, the last update I got on SB1, it appeared that we, in the second year, because the first year starts in November in any case, so we don't get a full year of funding. But for the first full year of funding, it was estimated to be in the neighborhood of 1.245, as I recall. And I've been advised those are all subject to change because of circumstances. So, but that's a number that we really need to pin down because it'll make a difference. And if this gas tax is supposed to be reflective of SB1, then that's another approximate $100,000 on top of that. So just something to be aware of and be thinking about.
Yes, and thank you for bringing that up. We do have the estimates from SBCAG. The director did send those over to us. So
okay.
Thank you.
So possible pavement program funding strategies. As I said, we can seek additional funding sources for a portion of the rehab program. One of those is, of course, getting some of the RSTP back if that turns out to be what the SBCAG board approves. Perhaps issuing a bond that would allow the pavement program to get caught up. And they could be released over 30 years. And the other thing would be other revenue enhancement options, which, I mean, could be a sales tax. Also, as I said, looking at grant opportunities for our other projects so that we can release more money into the general fund or into Measure A for pavement.
Okay, we are at a point now where we're ready to move to the neighborhood services operating budget. If there's other questions before we leave pavement,
questions?
We'd be happy to answer those. No?
No.
Okay.
Thank you.
So now we have Vito Adamidis, our neighborhood services and public safety director, who's available for questions. We'll walk through this presentation here of the changes, and we'll also have Ms. Gaglione and Mr. Adamidis available to help present the CIP in a little bit. So,
good morning, Madam Mayor and members of the City Council. Pleased to be here today to review with you some of the updates related to the expenditures in neighborhood services and the public safety department. As you see on the screen, the special event response includes an additional $5,000 going forward. You'll recall that some of the events that we deal with throughout the year include the annual Deltopia event and also Halloween. Thankfully, I think our approach has been now standard operating procedure, where we include notification to the residents. We have contract services that come in and put out the traffic delineators, the signs, and also the enforcement component. So thankfully, we have seen a significant reduction in the number of impacts and complaints from the neighborhood. So I think that approach has worked well for the city. The animal control services contract sees an increase in the first year of 7.4%. It's roughly $16,921. As we've been informed by the county, this is, you'll recall, a per capita cost, and there was an increase in that cost factor. CERT, we're pleased to share with the council, as you've indicated previously, you wanted a robust program and one that really reached out and did a lot of work into the community. The calendar of events and training, specific training, over the next coming year includes 15 training events. That includes CERT in both English and Spanish, Least Dose in both Spanish and English, and also a Teen CERT. We'll be having one this summer. There are also important training events for advanced CERT training and also refresher CERT trainings. As the council has indicated, you've really wanted us to look at the folks that have graduated the CERT program. To date, that number is 278. And so the CERT refresher and advanced trainings are really focused for those individuals who have already completed the CERT training. So we hope that fulfills the mission of the council that you've asked to really have those touch points with our previous CERT core graduates.
I don't mean to interrupt. I just have a real quick question on that note. I know that it had been suggested several years ago the possibility of really having, and maybe we're doing this, a map that identifies the folks that have graduated from CERT and where there's a deficiency in what particular area that we may need more people to, you know, really reach out to that particular neighborhood, so that we're kind of looking at all the neighborhoods having CERT graduates.
It's an excellent point. We do have a database to track all of the CERT graduates. I don't know that we've gotten to the point where we've like geotagged them as where they're at in the city, but we will. But the good thing that I wanted to report is the interest in the program remains strong. And what we also know is the word of mouth from graduates that have gone through the program has really helped to increase the participation. So 15 training events throughout the year, and a number of other activities that don't fall into training but also are equally important are coordination with Santa Barbara County Aware and Prepare. We have 6 meetings throughout the year that we work with that group, so that's really like the regional approach. And also we have a Goleta Prepare Now program social, where we reach out to CERT volunteers just as a get-together and talk about, you know, things that have happened throughout the year. A number of events throughout the city, including the Lemon Festival and also the Gersh 4th of July event, where we have tables set up to ask for people who, you know, would like to volunteer and participate. And we also have a bilingual CERT news bulletin that goes out 4 times a year. So that was one of those touch points that you've asked for us to create and just keep in touch with the people who have been through the program.
Madam Mayor, yes. I have a question. Mr. Adamidis, I'm wondering, how do we
Besides these ways that you're talking about in terms of communicating with them, the CERT trainees and staying connected with them, if there were actually an emergency, is there a way that we connect with them in those instances, either through email, phone calls, or something to actually mobilize these groups of volunteers?
As part of the database that we've created for the CERT volunteers who have completed, we also have their contact information. And we ask for that information so that in the event of an emergency, we can contact them and have them help us out. And in fact, they have helped out. Like, we've had cleanup events in Old Town where we reached out to them and we were able to get folks that showed up to help out. So
we've utilized them in volunteer.
Yes.
I understand that capacity in terms of Beautify Goleta. I know that they're very helpful in that. Have we actually ever had an emergency where they were contacted or asked to be, utilized?
Not a full-blown emergency, but we have called on CERT volunteers to help us out where we needed help, because oftentimes they're the folks that provide that extra hand that we need. And we're never, we never have a surplus of help. We always need all the help we can get.
All right. Thank you.
Councilmember Bennett.
Unless I'm, correct me if I'm wrong, but my recollection in the CERT program, it's also taught that it may be that you will not get notification. It may be that the emergency is of such a severe nature, there'll be no means of being able to make contact. So independent action is taught as a part of the program.
Correct.
As opposed to waiting for someone to tell you what to do. You're supposed to be able to stand up and survey your own local neighborhood and review what the needs are. And when communications can be established, then be able to report.
Absolutely.
Is that an accurate?
Yes, sir.
Okay, thank you. Secondly, I'd like to know what the status is. We've talked about it for a number of years. The original goal in this city was to fully outfit four trailers. We were successful with a public-private partnership to outfit two trailers. What's the status of the two additional trailers?
Thank you for asking. We have been working very closely with the new management at the Red Cross. We just received a proposal for the two trailers that we've been trying to acquire. The cost associated with those trailers is roughly $15,000 per trailer. We're continuing to just kind of review that proposal and very soon come back to the Public Safety and Emergency Preparedness Committee with an update on that and hopefully a path forward to acquiring those two additional trailers.
Super. Thank you so very much.
Councilmember Seves.
Thank you. I'm glad that Mr. Bennett asked that question because we've been asking for that for a long time. I'd rather see it in the budget. Instead of spending $20,000 on more banners, I'd rather spend $20,000 for another trailer and find other ways of saving money. I want to get back to the question as far as activating our volunteers. Am I hearing you correctly? Right now, in order to get a CERT volunteer engaged, we have to call their phone number?
Or we can send them an email.
Or send them an email. Isn't there an automated system?
Yes, sir.
Do we have one? Have we looked into it?
I don't know that it's fully operational, but it's one of the things we're looking at.
Okay. Well, I think that should be a priority because, well, it should be a priority.
Mm-hmm. Mayor Pro Tem?
Hi. Two questions. One, first, is the amount here, the $53,000, this is the total budget. This isn't the increase. Is that right?
Correct.
Okay. Yeah, because the others are showing increases, and I thought, wow, we're ambitious. Okay. And just for curiosity, do we also coordinate or sort of integrate Boy Scouts and other Girl Scouts and other entities like that as part of, offering them training or integrating them in some ways?
Not directly. Most the classes that we have been primarily for adult age individuals. Oh, okay. Who are part of the CERT and LISTOS program. It's important to point out that the CERT training class is 24 hours in length. and it's community emergency response training. So these are individuals who are getting prepared not only to participate as part of a group of responders, but also helping their family and loved ones also become prepared, because that's one of the goals of the program, is to make sure that they're able to take what they learn in class and bring it home so they can help others in their neighborhood who didn't attend the training also benefit from that exposure.
Okay, well, just one last clarification. The Connect CTY, is that the system of communication?
Yes, sir. That's the system that the city uses to notify residents in the event of an emergency anywhere in the city. It can include the entire city. It can be drawn down to a geographic area that we can, for example, if it's a localized incident on the west end of the city, we could draw a map so that individuals in that area of the city only receive notification, or we could do a broadcast through the entire city. And it's multiple forms of communication. Some have referred to it as a reverse 911 system. It's actually beyond that, because reverse 911 only relies on telephone communication. This also includes text and email communication.
Thank you.
The next item related to the Old Town Banner program includes an additional $20,000. What this is there are four rotations throughout the year of the banners that you see in Old Town, and also there is a fifth rotation that we do for the Lemon Festival with the Chamber of Commerce, promoting that event that has been very popular here in the city. So there's actually five rotations total throughout the year.
Excuse me, Mr. Adamides, was there some mention, I thought there was some mention about maybe possible banners in the Cai Real
yes.
area. Is that included in here?
20 new locations near the Camino Real marketplace.
Got ahead of myself.
Yes, ma'am.
Thank you.
Madam Mayor, did you say Cai Real or Camino Real?
Camino Real.
Oh, okay. It's Camino Real.
That's
okay.
correct.
So were you talking about Cai Real on the north side of the freeway?
Yes. Is that not?
We do have some on Cai Real on the north side of the freeway also.
Do they get rotated? I haven't.
Yes.
I guess I'd go more. I'm more on the western end of town. So.
They do.
Okay. All right. Just hadn't noticed that. Okay. Thank you.
We also have, as part of the recreation needs assessment recommendations, included a parks master plan going over the next 2 years, which is now also part of the CIP program budget. We could provide additional details when we get to the CIP. But that is an important step in looking at the deficiencies and the needs within the specific parts throughout the city, now over 20. Parks. Most people didn't know we had 21 parks in the city. Economic development, we have an overall decrease in the next fiscal year, 17-18, and an increase in fiscal year 18-19. We're including over the next 2 years a total of 3 bus shelters. Our work with the Goleta Entrepreneurial Magnet is continuing. Tonight, in fact, there is the finals for the new venture competition at UCSB. Some of those, the winners of that competition tonight will be the ones who will be the teams participating in the Summer Accelerator. So we're really looking forward to that. Should be a great event. And lastly, there is inclusive of $25,000 for a work related to a business improvement district and an Old Town study over that area.
Okay, Councilmember Bennett.
Yeah, I'd like to follow up on the GEM program. When it was initially envisioned, we agreed to fund it for 3 years. The premise for funding it for 3 years was to allow time for the prospective entrepreneurs as they move forward and became successful, that they would pay back into the program, which helped them become successful. Unfortunately, that model, as we've learned, hasn't quite worked out the way we thought it would. So I'm wondering, as we go forward, and especially because UCSB has become far more active than they were before and moving forward with the entrepreneurship of their graduates and their professors, and the licenses and patents that the university holds, it just makes me wonder, is the GEM program still relative to our community? We had problems with them wanting to participate in Old Town. We thought that was a great idea. Didn't work out so well there either. So we learned some more things. And so it just seems to me that the program ought to be, as opposed to just pushing it forward and with another 50,000, it just seems to be it needs to be reviewed and really, really determine, is this something that's going to make a difference? Because that was the whole goal in the first place. And times have changed. I mean, this was when we instituted this, I think it was like 5 years ago, 6 years ago, 4 years ago. I'm seeing fingers in the background. So we'd be going on our fifth year. And so, and then Santa Barbara City now has a number of entrepreneurial hubs that they put together within the city, not the city government, but, and I recognize those are profit-oriented type angel investors, et cetera, et cetera. But I'm just, that's why I'm questioning our model at this point in time, if it truly should go forward, should truly live beyond what our original thoughts and goals were when it was originally put together.
I think all your points are well taken. Staff has continued to monitor the program and will happily report updates and progress on that. One of the things that we're seeing that we're not able to report officially out yet is one of the goals was to take the talent that was coming out of UCSB through this program and help them land in our community in the way of new business startups or in leasing new office space or creating a new, you know, manufacturing location within the city. And I believe that we'll have very soon an opportunity to, a celebration, if you will, to share with the council a success story that relates exactly to that. And so that goal of GEM and the partnership with UCSB and the city in helping to bring that technology and that talent into the city, keep, and what we're finding is many of the graduates from UCSB want to stay here. They don't want to leave. And so, and so we have worked closely with Mr. Valdez in the Economic Development Front to work with those interested graduates from UCSB who are creating new startups and helping them land right here in Goleta. And as I said, I think there's some things in the works that we'll be able to report on very soon that we'll share with you exactly a success story, we hope, very soon that targets exactly that goal that we've just talked about.
Thank you.
Councilmember Seves.
Two quick questions. The bus shelters, I don't understand how they're part of economic development. And secondly, what type and where are they going to be where they're going to be located? Because there's different types of bus shelters.
Hello. Okay. Councilmember Aceves and members of the City Council. The bus shelters, in terms of economic development, is really designed to be a revamping, kind of enhancing the look and feel in Old Town. It's a small goal, albeit an important one, to try to make sure that at least places that the public, you know, stands around or is waiting for something, that it be something that looks attractive, something that looks like it's been updated. So one of the locations currently is in front of the Pattaya, the Thai restaurant, over on Orange and Hollister. Right now it's just a bench with no shade, so it's not the most ideal location to be waiting for a bus stop. The other one, which will, the other two, which will be trickier, is one in front of the Motel 8, next to Jiffy Lube. There's an MTD location there. That will involve trying to work with the property owner to get some sort of an easement in order to accommodate the size of the bus shelter. And the last one would be essentially across from Fairview Business Park on Fairview on the, what would that be, the west side of Fairview. There's currently right now there's a bus stop that's on dirt with a bench. And it's just in terms of access, in terms of aesthetics, we've talked to MTD, and that's one location that they would like to see done. We've also asked them to see if they would be willing to participate, to what degree. Unfortunately, funding for them, there's a whole bunch of other stops that they need to attend to that they just can't get to all of them. So this is an opportunity for the city at least to take care of those that are within its jurisdiction.
If I may add to that, when we met with MTD, they were very generous in noting that they could provide assistance with planning and, you know, design. So they're willing to provide in-kind service. And the other thing to note is that the type of shelter that we're talking about, we really want to be able to match what we have on Hollister in front of the 7-Eleven primarily. So we have a consistent look with the benches, with the shelter above, with the refuse cans nearby, all that same style and color.
As well as lighting, just in terms of safety.
Well, the solar, and then they're going to put in the AVL system too, and I don't know if these would have the AVL system at all included with them. What happened to the bus shelter on Stork? We're talking about relocating the bus stop on the west side of the street. Is that in the plan still?
We are still talking with MTD about that. We have it as part of one of the CIP projects, the one that refers to the, I believe it's South Stork Medians, and the point that we were trying to get to was one improvement project that would move the bus stops, would also include the modifications to the median, and would also look at whether or not we're able to accommodate again that free right-hand turn lane at Stork and Hollister. So those things are still being studied. With regard to your question and MTD, we have had conversations. They're somewhat open to it. They have some concerns. And are willing to work with us through those concerns. So okay. That's where we are.
Did you have some?
No, this
one. Okay. Thank you.
Are you going to talk about the last bullet?
Yes. As I mentioned, there's a $25,000 budget allocation for the Business Improvement District and an Old Town Study. Yeah.
Go ahead.
So this Old Town Study, this is a continuation of the work that the Chamber of Commerce was doing starting last year, or is this a new project?
If Mr. Valdez can step up to the podium, he can help answer your question for you.
All right. Mayor Pro Tem Kazin, members of the council, the idea behind the Old Town Study, this is independent of the chamber's effort in terms of what they're doing. This is focused on what city government can do now that redevelopment agencies have been gone, now that funding for economic development has been slashed largely at the local level and state level. The EIFDs, Enhanced Infrastructure Financing Districts, Business Improvement District, all these districts all require money, and they all require it from people. So the issue is, where does it come from? The business improvement district is usually an assessment among the different business owners, or it could be property owner based. The other options are the infrastructure financing district, which approach what redevelopment agencies used to do, which is essentially a tax increment financing tool. What we found and what we've shared with the economic development subcommittee is that unfortunately, as the laws have changed since redevelopment agencies went away, the ability to actually harness the type of dollar amount that you actually need from tax increment just really isn't there, because the schools are exempted. You have to get buy-in and okay from the other taxing entities. As we're talking right now, I can't imagine many taxing entities wanting to forego tax revenue. So we're really trying to find alternate methods of doing it. The business as usual just isn't happening anymore. So in order to get the kind of money to pay for some of the capital improvement costs is proved to be difficult. And this is intended to look at hopefully getting a consultant that's been working in this field that has other creative pathways to get there in order to to regenerate that money. So just for context, the former redevelopment agency used to bring in about $4 million a year. So if you take 20% off the top of that, that went to affordable housing. So 800,000 of that's gone. Some of the new infrastructure financing districts require affordable housing to be a component. Some of them don't. Some of them have different voter approval rules. So this is not something that's, I don't want to say easy, but a little bit less difficult in the past because you didn't have to have the voter approval for everything. And so that makes it a lot more difficult now going forward. And then you also had more participants so that you had an access to more capital.
No, that's great to explore all the possibilities. So I appreciate that.
Councilmember Bennett.
Yeah, Mr. Valdez, my question on the infrastructure financial district approach. My recollection, there's been a number of improvements. When that was first passed, it was totally bogus. I mean, it wasn't going to do anything. But my understanding has been, through the League of Cities, that there have been improvements made that makes it much more desirable than it once was. And there seems to be a number of cities that have agreed to go forward with that. Now, maybe I've been misinformed or misunderstanding of that, but I would appreciate, if it's possible, if staff can do a little bit of review and find out if, in fact, we have cities that have implemented the program and successes, failures, whatever the case might be, as a result of that. And schools being removed, which is about 40%, I think you said that, off the top, is a big chunk of money for any incremental financing. But in like Old Town, I think one of the things I remember is that the districts were required to be citywide as opposed to a specific area. And then I think there was a modification to that that allowed it to be more specific. Could be wrong about that. That's just something I know it was discussed. I don't know if it was passed. So,
yeah, just for context, the rules under which the former redevelopment agency operated under were under statutory pass-through payments as opposed to negotiated pass-through payment agreements that you would have seen in Isla Vista and other areas. So it was all kind of a unique formula that the RDAs had to abide by. If your RDA, I think, was incorporated after 90, I think it might have been 97 or 96, then you would have been subject to these rules.
AB 1289.
The other part of the formula that you're talking about with the EIFDs and how those changes have occurred over time, I was at a conference at the end of March where there were discussions about moving forward. The only information that I was able to garner was that there's been one EIFD done in the whole state of California in the past 35 years, and it was Legoland in Carlsbad. Very unique. Very complex. This is not a run-of-the-mill. Every community has one of these things. That's the only one that they could point to, and it was actually pointed to as a failure of that legislation, that the only uptake was one in the whole state of California, and I think that EIFD or that IFD legislation passed in the late 80s. So there's been changes. Unfortunately, I think a lot of the changes, and the last I spoke with folks, they had not exercised this or undergone approving any of it at the time, and this was at the end of March. So there may be some discussions, people moving forward, but as of March, when we covered this, there was no actual uptake.
Okay, well, that's really helpful. I appreciate that particular piece of information. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem?
Just a clarifying question. With any of these tax increment financing, do we know how that interacts with the revenue neutrality agreement, which is also sort of trying to set aside, if you will, the property tax money? Does this, well, you don't have to answer if it's something we have to research, but I wondered about how the interplay between those two authorities.
My understanding is that because it's property tax and it goes through the county's, you know, property tax division, that would be subject to the RNA. This is not something that the city collects directly from as a separate property tax. Because it's part of the property tax rolls, my understanding would be it would be subject to the RNA. But we could look into that further.
Thank you.
continuing on under Parks and Recreation. The Parks and Recreation Manager position was transferred into the department, and that's reflected now in the budget. We also included supplies and services related to that position and support to the Parks Commission of the city. Training and travel has also been included for the full commission and staff. We've heard from the commission, and we've also thought it would be important to include some formalized training for the commission related to parks and recreation duties and functions. And there's also an increase related to all these efforts, particularly the park and recreation manager position being moved into the department, showing the increase there at the very bottom of the slide of $149,000.
What's the name change?
Under
Councilmember Bennett, excuse me.
What's the name change?
Oh, the name, the program name in our system was formerly Parks and Recreation Commission, and also across, you know, previous documents. So now we drop the commission name and just call it Park and Recreation.
Kind of like neighborhood services, almost.
Yeah.
Okay. Thank you.
It's like the catch-all. Right. Police services. So as the council knows, this is the largest line item for the city and represents a significant portion of the city's budget. So staff has been working with the public safety, city's public safety committee, as well as the representatives from the sheriff's office in the new five-year contract renewal. The term of that existing contract expires at the end of June. In talking to the sheriff's office, and as we've heard from the undersheriff, Mr. Barney Malakian, and other representatives, one of the goals that the sheriff's office has is converting all of the cities to the new contract model. And the model is, instead of calling it a number of FTEs, full-time equivalents that would be in the contract, for example, the city of Goleta's FTE count is 34.08. What that means is that there are 34 positions, full-time equivalents, that, and a full-time equivalent, by the way, is 2,080 hours a year, right? So as part of the sheriff's office goal to enhance their ability to track the costs associated with their resources departmentally across the entire department, and you may have seen in some of the budget hearings at the county where they're talking about cost recovery and tracking of costs associated with staffing, this new model would provide the city an opportunity to really see, in fact, importantly, how those resources are being deployed in the city. And at the end of each year, we would get a report, and they would track it quarterly, but they would provide us a report that says, hey, those 34 people that you have serving in the city get deployed to the city and are utilized in the city, let's say, 98% of the time. So we know that the staffing level is adequate for the city. Conversely, if that number was below, let's say that all the people that we contracted for during the course of the year, that number was below, let's say, 98 or 95%, the city could conceivably receive a credit for that, a credit. So I don't want you to get too excited about a credit, because I think those costs are going to be very closely looked at, and I think our staffing model is pretty close. It also gives a tool for the city and the sheriff's office to talk about, okay, during the course of the year, we had 120% of resources deployed in the city. So there would be a talk about, you know, do we have enough resources to handle the existing calls for service in the city? It's an important model that I think makes a lot of sense going forward for all the cities in the county, and particularly for the city of Goleta. They have referred to our contract model as the boilerplate that they would like to use for all the other cities to use, because as you'll recall, prior to this last five-year term contract, we brought in the Matrix Consulting Group that did a complete review of the city's contract, all of the cost recovery models, the staffing. They validated the formulas. They looked at the costs associated, and we shared those results with the council. So it put us in a really good footing going forward, as we are now. We received a request from the sheriff's office. It's forthcoming. We haven't received it yet. But what they're going to do, because they're still working with all the other cities in the county, is they're going to ask that we continue our contract for another year until all that work is completed and the new contract language is completed and finalized and reviewed by legal counsels on both sides, so that there's no interruption in service to the city going forward. And we'll be providing more information. We're going to be setting up a public safety committee meeting to provide some of the more details that just came out of that request. But it's a continuity of service so that there's no interruption to the city or to the residents going forward.
I have a quick question on this model. Would this model be able to give us information on something that I asked for that we don't have, calls for service when it's regarding the homeless population?
We have brought that up with the Sheriff's Department representatives, including our chief, Lieutenant Huddle. So we will definitely be looking at an enhanced reporting model back from the Sheriff's Office.
That's great. Thank you. Councilmember Bennett?
Yeah, I have a question in regards to the, you're noting that the budget increase comparison is 4.1%. Is that a comparison with last year, or what is that comparing?
So what this number represents is the actual cost comparison, the blue sheet that's referred to by the Sheriff's Office, which we normally get in February, we received in May of this year. That increase, including the parking enforcement officer, was 10.7%. However, as the council is aware, in prior years from the Sheriff's Office, we've received very little increases in the way of the contract in terms of cost. For example, last year in fiscal year 16-17, the cost increase to the city was only 2.1%. The year before, it was 0%. And the year before that, in fiscal year 14-15, it was less than 1%. It was 0.73%. Even though these increases have been very minimal to the city, in working with the city manager and finance staff, we have continued to budget projected increases in the contract. And I think this is what's important to share with the council today, is while the increase, the gross increase, the big number to the city is 10.7%, the net increase, because we've internally budgeted and anticipated increases from the sheriff's office, is really only a net hit to the city of 4.1%.
Okay. Well, that just concerns me a little bit, in the sense that, and you're correct about the lower figures going back the number of years you did, but if you go back further, we had 8% increases, we had 10.9% increases, we had consistent increases over 5% each and every year, and our revenue increases paled in comparison. And it was stated from the dais more than once that we cannot continue to support those level of increases because we're not getting the increases in revenue. And everybody agrees that public safety is a number one priority, and we agreed with that as well. So yes. Looking forward on this thing with eyes wide open, if we're consistent with a 4.1% increase, and we know this is one-third of our budget going forward, it's been pretty consistent, one-third of our budget going forward, and we're only getting 2% overall or a 3% overall revenue increase, that's a huge impact overall on the budget. It continues to eat away, so there's less money available for anything else. So it would hope, and I'm familiar with what you're discussing because it's been presented to us at the public safety meeting, that this new approach to budgeting and this new approach for accounting for costs will be an open window that we'll be able to see. And I think that's the part that I totally support. I think that's really necessary. But I'm also concerned overall, at the end of the day, what are the overall costs going to be to us? Because previous to the years you just quoted, they were significant and had a tremendous impact on our budget overall.
Yes, sir. I think you make great points. As you know, historically, the increase since incorporation has been about 5%. It's probably a little bit over that. And we did have some years, in fact, in fiscal year 12-13, I believe it was 7.3%. I didn't bring the numbers all the way back to incorporation, but I did go back to fiscal year 12-13 just to give you a little bit of a flavor for where the increases have been and kind of an idea. I also wanted to share, as part of the DSA, Deputy Sheriff Association, contract negotiations with the county, you may have heard and you may have heard bits and pieces in the media, but I wanted to share with you what some of the numbers are coming out of those negotiations that speak to Councilmember Bennett's point about looking ahead with eyes wide open about potential increases in costs to the city. From June of last year to July of this year, there will have been three negotiated increases in salary. A 2% increase in June of last year, another 2% increase in July of last year, as well as a projected 3% increase in July of this year. So all in, it's a 7% increase from June of last year. And typically, those cost increases associated with salary to the city, when we look at the increase in cost to the city, roughly 40% of that increase is attributed to salary costs, roughly, ballparking it. So we have communicated those concerns going forward, because the cost of continuing to provide service going forward obviously becomes more difficult as the salary increases and other benefits. And there's also workers' comp, insurance, vehicle fleet, communication, and all those cost centers that are included in the sheriff's budget that are part of the increase to the city.
Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem Kasdan?
Well, you know, I just observed that most of those, the vehicle fleet and those things, you would expect to increase at the regular cost of living. You wouldn't expect them to be double. The, you know, I could see pensions, health care, those are increasing above the inflation rate, et cetera. Do we know, for instance, I know it came up with Santa Barbara that they had issues associated with overtime and how that was allocated and determined. This is something we've talked about, or it's been discussed before, and we're comfortable with how it's worked out?
Yes, sir. So, Mr. Mayor Pro Tem, staff has been concerned about, and we've been watching the county budget hearings because they have similar concerns, and that is, when you have the number of vacancies that have been vacated at the Sheriff's Department, either through retirements, injury, or people going to other agencies, lateraling over to other agencies, you have vacancies. And so the way that you cover the service for those individuals who are out is through overtime. And those costs have gone up over time. And as you know, overtime is time and a half. So those costs are a concern. For the city, we monitor the overtime account, and thankfully the city's level of service has been pretty stable throughout the contract period, which has been pretty good. But I know that there is a very active and a very energized effort to fill those vacancies, to bring new people on board the sheriff's office so they can fill those vacancies and not be so dependent upon the overtime to cover the gaps in service.
Well, in Santa Barbara, one thing that was described to me is that they had a particular, people who are close to retirement, they had a policy in essence of allocating overtime to those folks so it would enhance their pension. And that's not something that's an issue for us, is that right?
We haven't seen that to be the case. For us, I mean,
Madam Mayor.
Okay.
Good.
Councilmember Seves.
First of all, on that last comment, it's illegal to augment your pension with overtime.
Correct.
So they can't do that. Secondly, we need to be fair when we talk about the salary increases of the sheriff. Because of the county's financial problems, the Deputy Sheriff's Association forego raises and actually gave money back. And so those numbers, those increases, were basically get caught up with the market. Now, if you look at comparison, what Santa Barbara PD pays versus what the sheriff pays, there's a gross difference. And that's one of the reasons why the Sheriff's Department has such a vacancy factor, is because they get trained and they find somewhere else to go and make more money for their family. I don't blame them for that. But it goes back to retention. And the salaries and benefits are a big part of it. The other thing is, because the sheriff is filling one of our FTEs with overtime, doesn't mean we're paying time and a half. And that needs to be clarified for the public. We're not paying time and a half. We're paying their salary. They're paying time and a half to meet the contract that they have with us. So the only time we pay overtime is when they're called into court on one of our cases, or they work late in handling reports or arrests beyond their duty, and so there's overtime assigned to that.
And also events like Deltopia and Halloween, where we have additional officers.
And that doesn't come out of our budget.
We have actually an overtime budget that covers the cost of those events. It's included.
To increase, well, and it's to increase the services for our city, but not to sign to Deltopia.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Councilmember Bennett.
Yeah, I would just like to throw out another clarification. The cost for overtime is actually less expensive than having a full-time employee, because when you add in all of the costs associated with that employee, it exceeds 1.5. It goes up in the neighborhood of about 1.62 or 1.64. At least that's my memory. So it exceeds that. So when you don't have an employee, you take the salary savings from not having that position filled, and you pay for your over, you transfer it over into the overtime budget. So the bottom line is, at the end of the day, you actually save money. And as far as I know, that's true with any public safety agency. I don't know of any exceptions to that based on the cost of the benefit side of things these days. So I just want to clarify that if someone is suggesting that because someone's working and filling shifts and getting paid time and a half, that that's more costly, it absolutely is not. And also, I would support what Councilmember Aceves says. There is no overtime added to a pension. That is not. And besides, today, pension spiking is illegal and has been since Jerry Brown signed the revamp of pension programs. But overtime never occurred with enhancing your pension, either with Santa Barbara PD or with Santa Barbara County Sheriff.
Thank you for the clarification, and staff concurs. I believe the legislation you're referring to is PEPRA that the governor signed into law. Going forward with the slides that we have, as I mentioned, switching from the time model to a time model from the traditional full-time equivalent model. The contract is under review. We'll bring back the final recommendations to the council soon. But as I indicated, the continuation will come to the council at your June 20th meeting under consent, just to keep things going forward as we work with the sheriff's office very closely to finalize this new model and all of the related contract documents. And I might add, they're working with all the cities in the county to do the same effort, so the conversion makes sense for them to all happen at the same time. We would obviously like to go now, but we certainly want to work closely with them and be part of the effort to bring everybody on board at the same time. And they have been really excellent to work with. As the council knows, we have a strong partnership with the sheriff's office, and we truly feel like we have a tremendous partnership with them, and really a great group of people that have served the city and provide a great level of service that we enjoy here. Just a couple of other comments on this slide. We've included the electric vehicle for parking enforcement and the AutoChalk mobile software. So this will be as part of the parking enforcement effort in Old Town, using the vehicle and the camera setup that if any of you have received a ticket in Santa Barbara City, you'll know that that process is very now modern. So it's automated. And in fact, I received a ticket. And what I was fascinated in finding out was when I received my ticket, there was a picture of both the front and rear of my vehicle, showing the exact time. So you may have received a ticket too, Councilmember Richards. I see you nodding. So since this is an area of great interest to me, I was very impressed with how quickly the ticket was issued, and also the technology behind how it captured the vehicle information. So what you're seeing before you is very similar to what I'm speaking about. And the cost associated with this new vehicle and the software and cameras is being paid out of the Sheriff Facilities Development Impact Fee account, which is Fund 224, which these costs are appropriate to be charged to that account, and it doesn't get charged to the general fund, which the council, I think, would appreciate.
Councilmember Seves.
Mr. Adamidis, on the electric vehicle, we talked about that at our public safety meeting.
We did.
And there was two issues that came up. One was we don't have a charging station. Secondly, the maintenance issues was very expensive versus getting a not all electric vehicle. And my understanding, we weren't going towards an electric vehicle, but now I see it on the screen. What's changed?
Mr. Seves, the difference in price is, I think, $3,000. I think the other one was $44 for the gas model. The electric vehicles, my understanding, was the preferred method. It could be charged at any city hall or at the yard. So if that was a misunderstanding on my part, I apologize. We can easily change that number and drop it a couple thousand dollars for the gas version. My understanding was that the city had planned on using as many more green-friendly vehicles as possible, including using hybrids when allowed and when feasible. So my assumption was the electric vehicle would be the preferred method, so I apologize for that oversight. We can get a gas vehicle quote.
Well, I thought that was the direction. I'm totally in favor of our entire fleet going as you stated, but this vehicle is different. This one's going to be, if used right, is going to be used a lot, especially once we, and my second question is going to be, where's our time zones? When's that going to be taking place? Because they're not, we're getting the auto chalk system, we still don't have a time zone. But this one here is going to be used a lot. The ability to get it recharged and still maintain its activity could be problematic. So personally, I think this one vehicle needs to be a gas vehicle because of the nature of the work that it's doing.
I was wondering if you could offer any idea of how long it would hold a charge. I mean, how long?
Yeah, currently they're designed to hold a charge anywhere between 8 to 10 hours of regular use. Again, regular use being subjective. So if you're, you know, have it on the whole time and you're going very slow, it's probably going to use the battery quite a bit. Again, if you're zipping around town a lot with it on, then obviously it's going to use a lot of power. You know, the flip side is the gas model is pretty fuel efficient. These vehicles are very light. They don't use up a lot of energy in terms of weight. But the other convenience is by having a gas operated vehicle, you're not limited to a charging site. You could easily go to any number of fuel stations around the city.
I understand. I just want to go on record that I would support moving forward with an electric vehicle. That's the way of the future. That's the way we should go. Gas emissions, and that's just my take, and maybe that can be further discussed with all of us. Oh, Councilmember Bennett.
Yeah, I would. I don't have a problem with the gasoline vehicle either because of the mileage that you're speaking of and the amount of energy that it actually uses, which is incredibly minimal. However, setting the stage and trying to, you know, let the community know that we're committed to being as green as we possibly can. But this vehicle has an important function, and we surely don't want it to die out in the field. So I think what I'd like to see, and I'm more than willing to let staff use their judgment in this, but that is to make contact with those agencies that have electric vehicles, and let's find out how they work in real world. I mean, that to me would be very educational. They use them, as you described, one way or the other, or both, or what have you. So I would think their use would be instructive and allow us to then make some determinations from that. Can we, in fact, keep our parking enforcement person in the vehicle and utilizing it to the extent that we expect them to be using it each day and keep it fully charged? And if that were the case, then I would say I think electric makes sense. You know, the fact we have to spend a little more to get there, I think, is a good expenditure. But if it turns out that they have problems or they have to go pick up the vehicle or ask a business if they can plug in the field, then I would say, no, that's not something where I would like us to go.
Just for edification purposes, I have spoken to the manufacturer. They are a sole source of these vehicles, and they say that the overwhelming majority, closer to 70 to 80% of their clients, the respective cities, are purchasing the electric vehicles. It seems to be the preferences. All of the San Francisco, New York, LA ones are all electric vehicles. They do have some gas that they do use for certain geographic areas for convenience and then, you know, lack of infrastructure, but the move overwhelmingly is towards electric vehicles. And I believe the one that we brought from, at least the city of Santa Barbara was kind enough to bring over for a demonstration, was an electric vehicle.
Okay. Thank you.
Mayor Pro Tem?
Well, it's a quick question.
Sorry.
The 8 to 10 hours that you gave, you know, is it, in other words, 8 hours would be if it's going slowly from car to car, that kind of thing, and 10 hours if it's doing zipping around more, or we don't really know. I mean, if it's doing its job and it's mostly just going slowly, do we have a day's worth of charge likely? Otherwise, you know, I completely support the idea that Council Member Bennett raised to see what experience there is. And
yeah, generally those are the specifications given by the manufacturer. They report that for all intents and purposes, using them for the day on a regular 8 or 9 hour shift, it's sufficient. The other thing too is that just because you have the vehicle out, you don't have it necessarily on all the time. So there may be moments where the parking enforcement officer is back at the office and is writing up reports or doing some administrative tasks. He's not driving around the city going 25 miles an hour. Again, this is based on the information that we have. They report that these are designed to meet the needs of these types of uses, especially for law enforcement, parking enforcement. And actually the big market for these vehicles is on university campuses as well, which, as you could guess, was very helpful given the size and maneuverability.
Councilmember Richards?
Yeah, I would support looking at the electric vehicle if it's feasible. I appreciate what Councilmember Bennett said, and that if we find information that says that it's not feasible, then clearly let's look at the gas powered ones. But if it seems that the information that we have supports the fact that this would be appropriate for this purpose, so I'd be okay moving forward with that.
Just a final comment. I'm really not happy with the fact that we're here now talking about a type of vehicle, when we've been talking about this for a very long time. In fact, I think I know the Public Safety Committee's had it a few times. We brought it here. Council looked at it and looked at a vehicle from Santa Barbara, and still we're at a point now where we have a parking enforcement officer. We don't have established time zones, and we don't have a vehicle for this person to use other than a regular car, which, by the way, is not electric. My biggest concern is this parking enforcement officer is going to be traveling throughout the entire city every day. It's just not laying a time zone in Old Town. It's going to be handling all the abandoned vehicles all over town, and the time adds up. And so, go out and find out what everybody else is doing. I would go and talk to not just the electric vehicle maker, because he's going to give you his sales pitch to make sure that we buy what he wants. But we got to find out what exactly works for our city, given its demographics, given its traffic, and the type of work that this person is going to be assigned to do.
Just to clarify, the manufacturer makes both the gas and the electric. So that's just
okay. Well, let them talk about both, but let them give them what our city's needs are.
Thank you. Oh, Councilmember Bennett, did you have something else?
Yeah, I was wondering. I thought Councilmember Aceves might have gotten a response, and I didn't hear one. Well over a year ago, as I recall, we had this similar discussion as we're having now. And one of the issues that was brought up then prior to the hiring of a parking enforcement officer was going out and doing two things. Number one, digging up all the resolutions from the county who had established parking areas and limited parking for time, and then finding out those areas that didn't have it or where there might be just signs, however they got there, without a resolution, so that we could correctly designate the areas for parking and the time limits established so that we would have a legal basis to provide a site. It was also brought out that the parking spaces along Hollister Avenue in Old Town, as an example, if you drive down there at any given time, you'll find two, three, four cars and maybe three marked off spaces. I find that interesting. So maybe the spaces are larger than they need to be. I don't know. But there's a lot of groundwork, a lot of footwork that yet needs to be done, not the least of which is reposting signs, although I've taken pictures and shown folks that are interested the pictures I've taken on Hollister of the signs that exist. There's many, many gaps in that regard. So we can't even enforce anything in Old Town. And my recollection is we were told the last time it would take us about 6 to 9 months to get all that accomplished. And I'm just disappointed that it sounds like we haven't been there. We haven't done anything. Now, maybe I'm wrong. If we have, great, and thank you very much. But it doesn't sound like it.
Councilmember Bennett and Councilmember Aceves, your points are well taken. The groundwork has already begun in reviewing all those resolutions and parking restrictions along Hollister. It's a multi-departmental approach that includes the Department of Public Works, the City Manager's Office, and also the City Attorney's Office. So that work we are going to try to push forward as quickly as possible to complete, because we do understand that before you go out and enforce the parking restrictions, you need to make sure that all your ducks are in order to ensure that. We also know that some parking areas along Hollister that were painted have over time had interesting extensions to those parking areas. So we need to make sure that what is out in the field is compared to the adopted resolutions and parking restrictions that were originally adopted, and to make the corresponding adjustments in the field so that it's accurate and that the tickets that are issued are in fact valid. So we share that concern, and we also get the council's interest in making sure that we complete that work effort as soon as possible, and that work is underway.
Well, I think that our experience, we've already known that we have some community members that have painted their own red curbs.
Yes, sir.
And I'm familiar with one particular spot in Old Town where the green curb that was designated maybe by the county for 15 minutes one day got painted gray, so it doesn't exist there anymore. So it's not just, you know, the parking time. It's also what was previously established, and it doesn't make sense today. That's the other thing I would hope that it's, that staff would evaluate. Even if you find the legal resolution in effect and the proper curbing color is in effect, then I would still like to know, does it make sense that it's that way today? So when you bring back the package, we can make whatever adjustments are might be necessary or not, and be just aware that we brought it back. It's legal today, and if legal counsel determines we need to, you know, reestablish it, great, we can do that. And one last thing I would make, because it's a complaint that was made to me some time ago in the, I think it's now been, in fact, I know it's been resolved. We had a commercial curb marking on the north side at Tecolote and no signage. On the south side, next to the Santa Cruz Market, we had signage but no curb coloring of yellow. And a constituent got a ticket parked next to Santa Cruz Market and wasn't very happy because the curb wasn't painted yellow, yet on the north side at Tecolote, which he was familiar with, was painted yellow. So I would also ask that anything we do, let's be consistent so that I think everyone recognizes what red, green, yellow, and white indicates. It's in the vehicle code. and tells you what you're supposed to do. So I would hope that we would have that as a minimum. And in some communities, like on the commercial parking, they'll indicate you can park there after 6 and you can't park there before 7 or something like that. So there's no confusion. Or you can't park there at all for 24 hours. So those are the kinds of things that I think really need to be identified so that they're not misunderstood by members in our community. Because once this enforcement begins, I can assure you, at least us electeds, we're going to hear about it. And I just promise you that'll be the case. So I'd like to make it just as clear as is possible.
Just want to add a couple more things if I could. One, I'd like to know when this project is going to be completed, when staff work's going to be done, and when we'll see signage up.
Councilmember Seves, if I could, it might, and this will be a question for legal, but it is difficult pulling up and finding all of the old ordinances, putting them together, and it might be quicker to do a new overlay and create new ordinances and just and delete the old ones, and just it'll be really quick, and then we could do that.
Yeah, that was my second question.
So just to give council an update, we've been working with the planning department to get the maps done of all the different prohibitions that were carried over historically from the county, as well as any that the city has passed in its cityhood. And so we're going to get the maps done and work it over with a public works team, and then bring it back to council to see if that those are truly the restrictions that we want today. So that's sort of what we're working on at the moment with our mapping consultant, and getting all the documents, historical documents, over so that we can make sure all the mapping is done properly.
Okay, and then my next question is, when we do signage on time zones, I would hope that we include signage to take into consideration street sweeping. Because Old Town has only gotten, in my memory, one good cleaning with a street sweeper, and that was when we had the Christmas parade. And so because the cars don't move, and most of them there are either residents from the east-west streets or business employees there, the cars just don't move. And they're not abandoned. They're just parked there all day and then moved. So we've got to control that. And I think we had a discussion of time zones, the entire east-west corridor, and first block north and south. So I hope that would come back very soon as a high priority, because I've spoken to many business owners as I walked through Old Town, and they were so excited to have this happen. And now they're saying, when? In fact, I got one business owner who refers to Old Town as the Wild West when it comes to parking, and it shouldn't be that way.
We can do that, Councilmember Seves. Also, we have requests from businesses south of Hollister to have timed parking, because what we have found, what they've complained about, and what we have found to be true when we have done projects, we've had a post for no parking, the auto repair shops are using the street to put cars while they're waiting to work on them. Mm-hmm. And so there's a lot of available parking in Old Town if we can get those times right and make sure that people can come, they have adequate time to do business, have lunch, but then they leave and they open up that space for others.
Councilmember Bennett?
Yeah, I'm real excited. I'm hopeful this will be moving forward in a quick fashion. I love your idea about just rescinding whatever it was and going fresh going forward. I think that's absolutely fabulous. And I think the issue of the street sweeping, one of the options, as I recall, that was thrown out to us was to put a no parking restriction in the evening after the businesses close, so that we could have street sweeping in the evening in the commercial district, not the residential district, but the commercial district of Old Town, and have that be a part of the contract. And I don't think that went anywhere particularly. But I'd like to see that kind of resurrected and reviewed once again, to see, given the current movement that we're making and going forward to improve the parking situation and the overall ambiance in Old Town. This is one of the things where we can make a difference. And so it would seem to me that in discussions with the business community, I'm not sure what time would be appropriate, you know, because the restaurants stay open later. But, you know, maybe something after 10, I'm not sure. But whatever might work for them, I just think that's the time when the street sweeping should be put in place. And I would agree with Councilmember Aceves, when we're doing signage, you know, once, because whether our people can do it or whatever, or we're ordering signage, all of that occurring at the same time, I have a feeling on a per unit basis would be less costly than making separate orders. That would be my guess anyway.
Yeah, Councilmember Bennett, absolutely. And most likely the street sweeping there would be done in the wee hours of the morning so that we could kind of combine it with the street sweeping that would go on anyway, so we didn't pay a premium for someone to just come out and sweep Hollister. We'll get the pricing, what that would mean, and come back with an overlay for all of this.
Just one other observation. The as a priority goal or objective, I think it's appropriate to include this element in the strategic plan. It's something we expect to see accomplished in the coming period.
Okay. It's 10:54. We haven't even gotten to CIP yet.
So. Well, Madam Mayor, we are able to probably get through the special funds in the next 5 minutes if there aren't too many questions, but I think that would be a good place to stop and then start tomorrow with CIP.
Okay, thank you.
Okay, revenue neutrality. So revenue neutrality agreement currently, we're expected to do a contribution of $5.7 million in year one and then again $5.8 in year two. This estimated total contribution since incorporation totals approximately $109 million. Moving on to other funds, so this covers our special funds, gas tax. Based on the latest Department of Finance latest release, we're expected to receive $881,000 in gas tax. This is approximately an increase of $269,000, which is related to the SB1. In fiscal year 18-19, we're expected to receive $1.2 million. Again, this is the estimated numbers provided to us from Department of Finance. They tend to do releases throughout the month, so we'll be paying a close attention to that, making adjustments as necessary. Approximately $7.15 million additional gas tax revenues will be seen by the city over a 10-year period. The majority of it has been programmed to the pavement rehabilitation program. Measure A fund, for year one, we're anticipating $1.5 million. In year two, we're anticipating $1.57 million. These funds are used to finance city capital projects, street maintenance and repairs, and traffic signal maintenance and replacement. And then the balance of these funds are programmed to CIP projects. Solid waste. The operating budget is currently for year one at $1 million, and then fiscal year 2018-19 at $946,000. This includes the addition of the assistant engineer. Street lighting, that's one of our special taxes, and we anticipate $277,000 each year. The library development impact fee fund. The draft budget is currently being reviewed and updated by the City of Santa Barbara. We plan to discuss this budget at tomorrow's budget workshop number 3, where a recommendation will be made using library DIF fund. Library services fund, this is also our other special tax. We expect a 1.9% increase in year one and then a 1% increase in year two. And that concludes the special funds.
Councilmember Bennett.
Real quick, we got 3 minutes. On the library services fund, that's connected to the CPI, and the 1.9 I think is pretty realistic based on where we've been, but the 1% for the second year, are we expecting that the CPI is going to go down?
I can speak to that briefly if you don't mind. The 1.9 is the actual end of the 2016 calendar year CPI, which is what Measure L dictates that we use. So that's where we got that number. The 1% is a projection. It isn't necessarily going to be 100% accurate, but that was what we were thinking a conservative increase in CPI would be for budgeting purposes. We will know by the mid-year time period in early 2018 what the end of calendar year 2017 number is, so we can make an adjustment at that time.
Okay. And the street lighting special tax, it may come up later in your budget presentation, but I just want to make sure, because we've been going forward with the taking over the street lighting system. I haven't seen that yet, so if I won't have any questions if you're telling me that's coming up later.
Well, the street lighting, as council directed us, we have submitted our application to Edison, and it's in the process of final review by Edison. They will then be submitting it to the CPUC for final approval. It's a lengthy process. It'll take quite some time. What we're showing here in the special tax is the expected revenue that we generate from that.
The assessment. That, I understand.
The assessment. So that's the only portion we've shown here because that's what we know at this time. So as far as what information on the purchase of those streetlights and the conversion, those will be covered in our CIP presentation because we've created a project sheet for them.
Okay, thank you.
If I could, or later, are we also going to talk about, are we continuing to set aside money for our what do we call it, our special street lighting fund? We put away some money annually. Are we still going to do that?
Staff has a recommendation we'll discuss when we get to that CIP worksheet on that project.
I'm going to call it the Michael Bennett Fund, but I forgot what it was called.
The Michael Bennett Fund. All right. It looks like that completes our second workshop. So this meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everyone. Workshop. So this meeting is adjourned. Thank you, everyone.